I'm George Borey, Chief Investment Strategist for Allspring Fixed Income, and welcome to Spring Talk. With me today is Nick Venditti. He's the head of the Municipal Fixed Income team at Allspring. And Nick, I understand you're about to start making monthly appearances on Spring Talk.
It doesn't get more exciting than that, does it, George? Every month, the Muni team will be coming to you with information about the markets, the economy, anything else we view as exciting and that you need to know.
Well, there's certainly a lot going on in the Muni market, so I'm really looking forward to it. So monthly Muni moments with Nick. You know, is there anything that you want to preview to the group?
I mean, look, I think there's a lot going on, certainly with the political backdrop, which we'll be talking more about as kind of Trump's first 100 days in presidency come to fruition. There's natural disasters taking place currently, which we'll be talking a little bit about today. And then obviously there are the macroeconomic dynamics that continue to play out, not just for our asset class, but much more broadly across the financial markets.
Now, that's a good point, Nick. And it's been a rough start in 2025, particularly for many people in California and specifically in and around Los Angeles. So maybe a couple thoughts on how that is impacting the Muni market, how it's impacting the bonds and really, you know, how it is impacting investors as they think about kind of municipal investments in and around Los Angeles.
Yeah, absolutely. I think first and foremost, our heartfelt thoughts to all of the people impacted by the fires. Obviously, the loss of property, much more importantly, the loss of life trumps anything we're going to talk about today. But ultimately, this is impactful to municipal issuance, to municipal credits. You have seen pretty wide devastation through parts of Los Angeles County, particularly in places like Altadena, where the fires have kind of raged out of control for going on over a week at this point. We are obviously monitoring this situation incredibly closely. The good news is, from a municipal perspective, is that the fires haven't been all that impactful to municipal credit, save a handful of names that potentially have some liability related to the fire. We've seen this in the past, not just in California, but in Hawaii most recently, where the power generating issuers have been found liable for at least portions of the damage. And so I think investors in the Californian market need to keep a close eye on those names in particular. And we are doing that on a day-to-day basis here at Allspring.
Okay, well, thanks. I really appreciate that. And I'm sure we're going to be talking about that over the coming months. And it's certainly been in a lot of the commentary that you and the team have been putting out. So thank you for that. Let's just take a quick step back and think about, you know, kind of last year, the Muni market and kind of how things are set up as we kind of start, you know, we're already a couple of weeks in, but as we start 2025 and think about the market a little bit more broadly, you know, 24 was a pretty spectacular year, another spectacular year, some macro volatility. Inflation up, inflation down, sticky throughout, pretty healthy job market, no shortage of excitement on the political front, with roughly 80% of the world going to the polls, but more importantly here in the U.S., one of the most spectacular and perhaps exciting elections of all time, you know, kind of created, you know, a wide kind of mix of opportunities. And in particular, you know, I think it's really interesting to see, like, in munis specifically, you had some of the best performing parts of the entire fixed income market. The muni high yield market had a fantastic year. But on the high quality end, you know, we had markets that really struggled and in some cases had negative mark to market returns for the course of the year. So how should we think about this year and sort of position, you know, kind of the muni sort of landscape for investors?
Yeah, look, I think we live in a crazy world, right? We live in such a crazy world that we normalized some of the volatility that exists. I've been talking to people about the election, right? We had a very contentious election. We had an election in which, you know, in the summer of 2024, there was an assassination attempt on a presidential candidate. In any other world, we would have woken up the next Monday and the markets would have been blood red. And then 2 weeks later, the other presidential candidate dropped out of the race. And in any other world, we would have woken up and the markets would have been on fire. But we kind of shrugged that off as well. And that contributed to excessive returns, both in equity markets and in high yield fixed income asset classes. Investors got excited that yield was back and they went after it and went after it aggressively. But now we're sitting in a world where credit spreads are essentially as tight as they have ever been. Credit as a risk is as expensive as it's ever been. And generally, when risk gets expensive, you want to take less of it, or you want to take it a little more prudently. So I think one of the big benefits of munis and what we're seeing kind of develop as we march into 2025 is opportunities for investors to diversify their holdings, not just from a duration perspective, but from a credit exposure perspective. I'm not telling you to avoid high yield completely. Absolute yields still look kind of attractive, certainly relative to where they've been over the last 5, 7, 10 years, but you need to be mindful that spreads are tight. And that means that you can get almost all the yield of a high yield portfolio by going up in quality substantially. You can get almost the yield of a long duration portfolio by staying a little bit shorter on the curve. And I think there's a real opportunity for investors to diversify their risks in fixed income.
So I think you make a great point. You know, there's the trade-off between interest rate volatility and credit risk, and credit spreads, you know, sort of across markets, across fixed income, are at fairly tight levels. How do you sort of manage through the interest rate volatility side? If you look at just 10-year treasuries, you know, sort of the typical year now, sort of the treasury has a range of anywhere from 100 to 150 basis points. That's some pretty big point moves as sort of that volatility works its way through the market. How are you managing that in the muni portfolios?
Yeah, I mean, look, we've seen over the past couple of years, I mean, on occasion, treasuries trade like Bitcoin, right? I mean, incredible volatility in treasury markets, unprecedented, really, relative to any kind of meaningful history. And so one of the big benefits of munis is that they're less correlated to everything, including treasuries. And so part of the reason, and we've talked about this a lot before, George, part of the reason that munis have had such great relative performance, relative to treasuries, relative to IG corporates, relative to esoteric ABS, whatever kind of fixed income asset class you're looking at, is because they have kind of sailed through this treasury volatility in a much less dramatic way. And so to the extent that we believe that kind of volatility still exists in this market, I do think munis will continue to provide a real ballast to portfolios and can be a meaningful part of an asset allocation.
Well, a big source of volatility, at least this year, is likely to come from the new administration, you know, with the reelection of Donald Trump and a pretty brave new fiscal and political agenda, you know, sort of the headline sort of assumptions that we're going to see tax cuts, we're going to see looser regulation, we're going to see tighter immigration policies and the use of tariffs in all sorts of ways, kind of makes for a challenging kind of cocktail, a mix, if you will, for bond investors, most of which is because of it increases the uncertainty of some pretty big kind of macro assumptions. What's your read through when you think about the balance between, you know, federal kind of opportunities or what's happening at the federal level relative to sort of what's happening at the state level? There's some meaningful challenges as it relates to sort of sovereignty and then really the opportunity that exists across the states and within the municipalities relative to the federal government.
I mean, there certainly are. I think at a high level, many of Trump's platform issues would potentially be wildly inflationary, right? Which is an enemy of rates coming lower and bond prices going higher. I think we've already started to see Trump back off of some of his, you know, aggressive tariff rhetoric a little bit. So it remains to be seen how ultimately that will play out. But I think it dovetails very nicely into the kind of messaging we've been providing from Allspring for quite some time. And that's that we're bullish on fixed income for the income, right? We think the income stream is what's really going to be valuable to investors. It's hard for me personally to craft an argument that rates are going to come down materially. I think coming into 2024, everyone believed that rates were going to come down 100 basis points. And so they went and bought lots and lots of duration. That didn't really come to fruition. I don't think it's going to come to fruition in 2025 either. But that doesn't mean that fixed income isn't really attractive, because the income streams, both on the tax exempt side and the taxable side, are really, really nice. I think from a credit perspective, and what kind of the political landscape may kind of impact as it relates to munis is interesting as well. One of the important considerations for investors is the fact that muni issuers generally have to operate with balanced budgets. The U.S. federal government sort of doesn't, as evidenced by the fact that we have $37 trillion in debt. So to some degree, muni issuers are localized economies. And that's not to say that there aren't localized problems, but I think an astute bond picker can really buy the right credits and avoid the wrong ones, can avoid some of the macroeconomic headaches that are likely to take place at the federal level by focusing on localities that are really, really outperforming.
So you bring up a good point. You know, the income matters, and you know, the tax exempt nature of that of income at munis is hugely beneficial to individuals. Now, part of the Trump agenda is providing tax cuts, and those tax cuts are going to cost anywhere from $9 to $10 trillion over the next 10 years if they're all implemented. And so he's sort of scrambling around looking for ways to pay for that. And one thing, one idea that has been floated has been, you know, possibly eliminating the tax deductibility of municipals. Is that a realistic possibility for the federal government to sort of decide that and push it down to the states?
No, it's full stop. No, it's absolutely not. Look, for a number of reasons. First and foremost, I will tell you that people have been talking about removing the tax exemption for munis for longer than I have been alive. And it seems like every federal election cycle, this topic kind of percolates to the top for a little while and then falls away. The reason it doesn't make any sense is because it doesn't really matter where you fall on the political spectrum. If you are as far as you can be to the right or as far as you can be to the left, the reality is that municipal bonds fund everything we all agree we need more of. Right? They fund essentially all of the education in this country. They fund almost all of the healthcare, all of the roads, tunnels, bridges, electrical grid, infrastructure is funded by municipal bonds. It does not benefit any of us as private citizens to increase the funding cost of our own healthcare, of our own education, of bridges so that they don't fall down, which is happening more and more frequently. Second, the actual dollar amount that is garnered from eliminating the tax exemption is de minimis when compared to the $7 to $10 trillion cost of extending the tax cuts, right? You are not going to make up enough of that deficit for it to be worthwhile. And then lastly, there are 50,000 municipal issuers, give or take. That is a powerful, powerful lobby. If you start messing with their cost of borrowing, they are going to show up at the steps of Congress with pitchforks and torches and to slay the monster, right? It's just not really a feasible alternative.
Well, let's drill into those 50,000 issuers. So what are some of the key kind of state and sector themes you and the team have set up for for this year?
Yeah, so look, I think ultimately this is a market where security selection is as important as anywhere else, right? We have a gigantic pool of names to pick from. I joke with my equity portfolio manager colleagues that, you know, their benchmarks are the Russell 3000 or the S&P 500, 500 stocks. What do they do all day, right? We have 50,000. It's a gigantic opportunity set for us. But I do think there are some thematic ideas that are coming to the top. And some of those are directly impacted by the political environment. The one I'll highlight today and that probably we'll talk about throughout the year is the higher education sector, right? Higher education, I think, is a sector that is in for a rough future. It's in for a rough future, one, because it costs too much money to send a kid to college. For any of you listening to this podcast who are currently writing that check, you know that in your heart. You know it intimately. It is very, very expensive. In addition to that, we have too many colleges and universities and too few high school students. We have a demographic problem. We have reached peak high school student. They are declining every year from here until the foreseeable future. So there is a supply-demand issue. You have an entire generation of people who have kids now, right? Who have 15-year-old kids now who have spent their entire life living under the burden of student loans. If you're a 15-year-old sophomore in high school and the only story you have heard from your parents is how their student loans made it impossible for them to buy a house, impossible for them to get financing for a car, how excited are you to take out $250,000 to attend a four-year school? Probably not so much. And then lastly, we have a political backdrop that is, I would say, less friendly to higher education in general. Right? The common rhetoric from the very far right is that higher education institutions are whatever, bastions of liberal propaganda, whatever the messaging is. But ultimately, if you're looking to cut expenses at the federal level, most colleges and universities receive at least some money directly or indirectly from the federal government. Those come through grants from the National Science Foundation or NIH. I could imagine a scenario in which those get rolled back pretty aggressively. And all of that, I think, leads to a less rosy credit background for the higher ed sector.
So it sounds like higher ed, you know, we want to be underweight or maybe even altogether out of the sector for the most part. Let's try and end on a positive note. What sectors or states do we think actually represent pretty good value right now?
Yeah, I think there are a ton that actually represent excellent value. Again, both from an absolute yield perspective and from a relative yield perspective. I mentioned earlier in this podcast that credit as a risk is getting expensive. The good news is you don't have to take a lot of credit risk to get a lot of yield. We are seeing a lot of opportunities in some of the boring sectors. To be honest with you, George, we're for the first time in a long, long time, we're seeing opportunities in vanilla things like local general obligation bonds. We're seeing a lot of opportunities in essential service revenue bonds, water and sewer bonds, bonds that are throwing off yields of 4-ish%. If you're a 37% taxpayer, a 4% yield translates into a 6.5. 6.5 is a big number for the lowest volatility, highest credit quality, lowest correlated asset class. 6.5, I would argue, is a number worth doing a cartwheel for. And you're getting that buying very, very high, very vanilla credits. And I think investors should largely take advantage of those opportunities.
Well, with that, Nick, thanks very much for being on today's podcast and sharing your insights. We really appreciate it. And I look forward to hearing Municipal Moments, which is scheduled to start next month. So thanks again.
Thank you so much, George. It's always a pleasure.
And for our audience, thank you for joining us today on Spring Talk.
Visit allspringglobal.com to receive more market insights and investment perspectives from Allspring Global Investments. To hear the latest from our thought leaders on the ever-changing investment landscape, you can subscribe to the program on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you for listening and joining us on the road to investing elevated.
This material is provided for informational purposes only and is for professional, institutional, and qualified clients, investors only, not for retail use outside the U.S. Recipients who do not wish to be treated as professional, institutional, or qualified clients, investors should notify their Allspring contact immediately. This content and the information within do not constitute an offer or solicitation in any jurisdiction where or to any person to whom it would be unauthorized or unlawful to do so, and should not be considered investment advice, an investment recommendation, or investment research in any jurisdiction. Investment risks. All investments contain risk. Your capital may be at risk. The value, price, or income of investments or financial instruments can fall as well as rise and is not guaranteed. You may not get back the amount originally invested. Past performance is not a guarantee or reliable indicator of future results. Allspring Global Investments, Allspring, is the trade name for the asset management firms of Allspring Global Investments Holdings, LLC, a holding company indirectly owned by certain private funds of GTCR, LLC, and Reverence Capital Partners, LP. These firms include, but are not limited to, Allspring Global Investments, Luxembourg, S.A., Allspring Funds Management, LLC, Allspring Global Investments, LLC, Allspring Global Investments, UK Limited, Allspring Global Investments, Singapore, Private Limited Company, Allspring Global Investments, Hong Kong Limited, and Allspring Global Investments, Japan Limited. Unless otherwise stated, Allspring is the source of all data, which is current or as of the date stated. Content is provided for informational purposes only. Views, opinions, assumptions, or estimates are not necessarily those of Allspring or their affiliates, and there is no representation regarding their adequacy, accuracy, or completeness. They should not be relied upon and may be subject to change without notice.
CFA and Chartered Financial Analyst are trademarks owned by CFA Institute. 100 basis points equals 1%. Diversification does not ensure or guarantee better performance and cannot eliminate the risk of investment losses. Copyright 2025 Allspring Global Investments Holdings, LLC, all rights reserved.